Hi, Lina.
Hello, hi Alejandra.
How are you doing?
Good, good.
Wow. We are starting this live, which we presented a long time ago. Thank you so much for joining me. This is The Beast of Wealth. I'm Alejandra Zlatapolsky. I'm the co-founder of Scalto. And this is Lina Levine. Today we're going to be discussing how to launch fintech products and what are the challenges we've been seeing nowadays. Again, thank you, Lina, for coming and joining me.
Yeah, absolutely. Excited to be here and share my expertise with everyone who's watching or listening to us.
Yes. So let's start here. You've help many organizations design and launch their fintech products, and many of them statistically fail. So we're gonna try to go over what works, what doesn't, and I want from your experience first, what are the key factors do you think companies, entrepreneurs should consider when assessing a new fintech product or idea, actually a new idea in its early stages? What should they be thinking about?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll share more on that in a second. I'd love to give our viewers just a little bit of background about myself and why I'm here today. So my name is Lena Levine. I'm the founder and CEO of software development agency called Frocoda. We've been in business for a decade now, which is crazy to say out loud. And over the last decade, we've worked with a variety of companies across different industries, including fintech. We work with startups, high growth SaaS companies. We also work with banks, financial institutions, and innovation teams within larger organizations. And during my time in the industry, I've pretty much seen it all. And as you correctly mentioned, Alejandra, statistically 90% of startups and products fail because for the variety of reasons. But what I've noticed and where I see a lot of teams, companies make the mistake is they build products that nobody wants. And what it means is they go from concept idea and they jumped into the implementation phase without investing proper time and doing proper due diligence, researching the customers and understanding the customer pain points. So, and that's the something that drives me, and that's something that I'm passionate about, to help companies out there to avoid those common mistakes and to ensure that the product that they build in is not a waste of resources, not a waste of time, especially nowadays. This year there are a lot of challenges that I see coming up on the market, both for startups and larger financial organizations, that I think focusing on building the products right from the beginning and being very mindful how you spend your resources is going to be key to success for many companies.
Okay. Yeah, there is definitely an issue with fintechs and funding, and that's the main challenge that they're facing right now. So, for them to decide where to invest their money, what do you think is, the first step there to define the product and assess whether it's a good idea or not?
Yeah. So when it comes to fintechs and financial institutions, right? And I want to make a quick distinction here, right? So when we talk about fintechs, it's usually high growth, fast moving companies that are focused on innovation, and they're moving pretty fast through different iterations of their product. But when it comes to banking industry, right, it's a very highly regulated industry. I mean, fintechs are also highly regulated, but financial institutions comes with their own set of challenges, right? You have so many stakeholders, different teams that normally operate in silos. So when it comes to banks and credit unions, how do you facilitate the innovation and leverage the resources that exist in the, you know, in the banks and in those organizations to drive that innovation, right? So, can you repeat your question again? I'm kind of
now, yes, you have the banks, you have the fintechs, yeah. Both of them have a limited resources, yeah. And now the fintech, especially the founders, are facing a lot of challenges in terms of new funding sources, and the VC world has dried up. So how do you define what's a good idea from what's not, first of all? So let's start there.
So how do I define what's a good idea and what's not a good idea? So
yeah, what are the factors that you look at first?
Yeah. So with my, you know, with my business, what we've been focusing on is a customer centric approach for idea and concept validation for different products. And one of the reasons why that's the directions that we chose is that, of course, you can look at the, you know, market size, you can look at the data, you can look at the statistics, you can talk to the stakeholders. But at the end of the day, if you build something and you might have, you know, trillion, you know, dollar market size, but your customers do not use your product, it doesn't solve their problem, it doesn't make sense to them, no matter how much money you're going to throw into, you know, to solve the, you know, to build the most amazing product, but if your customers are not using it and not paying for it, right, then it's a waste of time and resources. And that's why it's very important to, you know, all the ideas, all the amazing ideas that we get, it's important to ground them in the reality. And how do we do it? It's all about going directly to the consumers and trying to understand what their challenges, what their pain points are, right? And let's say if you're working within the banking environment, you will have multiple data points coming from different departments, right? You might have your sales, you might have your stakeholders, right? Because they might have their own goals. You might have, you know, the technical team, and you will have your customers. You might even have, you know, when we talk about data gathering, it might be not just end consumer, but it might be multiple, you know, kind of like personas, multiple decision makers, multiple people that have, you know, will be part of this project. But at the end of the day, it's the consumers, right? So what we want to do is to analyze the what their unmet needs are, right? So what their unmet needs and how can we solve those challenges and provide value to our customers. And what we do, again, we ideally, you want to go and talk to your customers, interview them, ideally one-on-one, because that's where you have those amazing conversations and you start uncovering things that your customers might not even realize themselves. And as you, you know, as you talk to people, you start seeing certain themes, then you can, you know, further refine and validate and then do, you know, like focus groups and send out the surveys and kind of like validate them in a more like larger scale. But the, in the beginning of the process, it's, you're going to get the most value by talking to people one-on-one and asking them really well thought out, in-depth questions, not to get the feedback, oh, will you use something like this? Like you don't, at this stage, you don't even need to talk to them about solution or product. What you're building, yeah. Product. Yeah. All you want, you just want to understand where they are in their life, what their day-to-day looks like, what keeps them up at night. And then, you know, on the back of your mind, start figuring out, does your vision align with their pain points?
Yeah, I think that also, like, starting small and solving one small problem sometimes is the best way to start. You know, a lot of organizations that I work with, they aim to solve this big problem all at once, right? So sometimes they just, you know, they fall in the process because it's just too much of a big of a goal. Or sometimes the client or the customer doesn't see it that way. You know, it's like I say, you know, we work with fintech companies and you say, like, the entry point is, I don't know, a debit card in a place where you didn't have it, or international payments, or mm-hmm. a very specific goal. I think that thinking about product in iterations and in small entry, low cost, and low barrier products, it really helps to develop the product little by little and stack it up in a way, right? Have you seen that happen?
Absolutely, yeah. And that's, I see where most of the success is, you know, in the industry, where companies focus on building products that really resonate with their customers, rather than focusing, let's say, like on marketing and sales and doing like all that, you know, loud, like in your face stuff. So, and that's where I see the trend in the industry focusing on this year, especially again with like challenges of raising funding and limited resources available to the companies. The companies will be more focused on building something small, taking it to the customers, getting feedback, improving it, you know, iterating it, then, you know, releasing it again and doing it, you know, in the incremental steps, which is, you know, your typical, like, you know, like a lean agile methodology, where you build something, you know, small, then you add more to it, you add more to it, right? Instead of trying to build everything at once, like you, you know, said, and, you know, spending 4 years building product, investing millions of dollars. And then when you release it, it's all right. It's outdated. Maybe your competitors beat you to the market. Maybe, you know, the product does not, that's not what the customers want, right? So you have to go back and have to, you know, change things up again, where if you're doing it in an incremental way, your speed to getting customer feedback, speed to market is much, much faster, even though you might not be offering all the bells and whistles, but focusing on one, like what is the biggest problem that you can solve to your customers, where you can add the most value and solve the, you know, the most burning pain point. And from that point, right, you can expand more and more and more rather than trying to serve everybody all at once.
Yeah, and a very simple problem to solve. From our point of view also is focusing on the customer journey. And it's not just about attracting. Like at first, you want to make sure that they have the best experience so that your whole customer journey makes sense and you get referrals. And that way, you know, you grow organically other than with this huge marketing lead acquisition marketing budget, which is what we always work with clients. We tell them, hey, let's look at your whole customer journey and see where you can improve the conversion process, which is part of product. Because a lot of our fintech clients, we work very closely about onboarding. Onboarding is a huge problem. I've seen it time and again still with fintech products, right? Because they, you know, clients fall in that process. They become frustrated or scared very easily. Mm-hmm. That's when you have to open your wallet. How have you like approached that problem in general when you see that? Because that deep in the conversion process, when a client, you know, downloads an app, but then actually has to fund an account, that's the biggest tip always, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it has to be super transparent, very simple for the customers. And especially now with the, you know, with the pandemic, we've got so much, you know, such a big influx of users into the digital space that would normally not use digital products for, you know, opening bank accounts or just like using their phone for those type of, you know, transactions the way they would normally do it in person, right? So now you're dealing with a lot of not technically savvy users as well, right? And at the end of the day, you always have to plan for that, you know, lowest common denominator. So for the users that are most, you know, struggling with the technology. So, and which is usually, right, your early adopters is a minority, and then like majority of the people kind of like those laggards where they, you know, catch up on the trends and become more comfortable with technology much, much later. So you have to cater to that larger group. And again, understanding how they use the technology, right? Because somebody who's 20 years old versus somebody who's 65 years old will have completely different habits, how they use technology, how much they even understand about technology, right? So I can't even describe how many, you know, times I had to serve as a, you know, tech support for, you know, people in my life and that, you know, age bracket, helping them to figure out all the difficult, you know, it, in my mind was easy easy things to do, but for them it was like big problem. So how do you make sure that somebody knows, right, how to check their balance if on the mobile app, and not to, and also, you know, keep it secure, because there is also like a huge, you know, in the financial industry, there's always a chance of, you know, fraud and all that stuff. So, yeah.
How do you, so actually going into that, how do you test the fintech concepts and features? How do you work on that?
Yeah. So if we're talking about the quick idea validation process, so the way we structure it is, again, the first step after we gather the information from the customers, we interview them, we now understand what, let's say, the top three, you know, pain points are and how we're going to be solving. So the next step would be to design the feature part of your application that you're building that solves that particular problem. And then there are a variety of tools on the market that you can use. We normally use Figma, which is a design tool. You can use different no-code tools. You can use Adobe design tools, right? So something that you can get in the hands of the customers very quickly, because again, like, we want to quickly iterate through the, you know, our idea, and design phase is the best way to do it, because once you get the feedback, you can quickly iterate it, apply to the design, get more feedback, right? Versus when you already built a solution, you know, you have a software product,
right,
then now it takes you 5 to 10 times more to fix something. So once you have a design prototype, and we create clickable, high fidelity design prototypes that look and feel as a finished product. So to an educated consumer, they might not even know that it's not functional, right? Because it look, you know, you click on a button, it takes you to the different page. You click on a drop down window, it opens list of the different functions that you can click on, right? Because it's all clickable and you connect it in that specific way. But what it allows you to gather feedback from your customers very quickly, right? You get on a Zoom with them, you share the link to the prototype, and you ask them to complete a few simple tasks, like, hey, can you, you know, navigate and open an account on this page, right? And then you just
do it live. That's what you recommend, like going one by one, finding a customer that will be willing to spend time with you, which is a challenge in itself. But you find the customer and then you ask them live to go and play with the product, correct?
Yeah. So, and there are also, again, a couple of ways to do it, right? You can do it one-on-one if you want that really in-depth feedback. And then you can do it at scale. You can use different platforms like user testing, user interviews to share that link with a variety of users. But if you, let's say, if you build in the product, it's your internal product, you know, within the bank, you might not want to share it with external public, right? Because you want to keep it confidential. But if you build in something that's not so, you know, proprietary, or you can release it with a wider audience, you can use a variety of online platforms to share the prototype with, let's say, hundreds of people, give them those, again, specific tasks to accomplish. And then the platform records sessions of the users. They might, you know, talk it out loud, what they're doing and how they're thinking. So the key
Which one is your favorite anyways? Like, which one do you think works best?
The platform or the method?
The method.
I prefer one-on-ones because, again, that's where you get the best feedback. And, you know, you not only get that, you know, firsthand experience to see what users are doing and how they're thinking and where they're struggling, but sometimes customers, you know, come up with additional ideas that you're like, oh my God, that's such a great idea. You know, I didn't even think of that. Or they might share how they, more information about the processes that they follow. Let's say if you build in product for like external customer, or maybe like internal product, let's say within the bank, right? And like for the tellers, right? And they might have specific process that they follow that, you know, let's say you are, you know, designer and developer sitting in the department, you might not know exactly how they, I don't know, like, I don't know, cash a check or like open an account, right? So you want to make sure that the process that you're designing actually makes sense to the, again, end user, right? And they might provide you additional feedback, ask questions. So again, you want to really flood your brain with customer knowledge, so that way the final result can be you know, as useful as possible for the customers.
Right. And then how do you balance the need for speed and that requirement of feedback? You know, because as I was saying, I've seen mm-hmm. it that it's really hard to get to that feedback, to get to the whenever it's the end consumer, if it's a B2C yeah. product, it's hard to get people to actually sit down with you or to answer the surveys, etc. So how do you balance those two?
Yeah.
Maybe
so
just speed to market. Yeah.
It's, I would say it's if you follow agile methodology, right, where you break down mm-hmm. your development again on those, you know, small sprints that can be, you know, like a typically it's a 2 week period of time where you deliver something like small tangible item, whether it's like a design feature. What you can do, you can have your design sprints be a couple sprints ahead of the development. So while you know, designing the feature, validating it with the customers, getting feedback, refining it, then once you're done, you know, your development team that let's say a couple of weeks behind you, they can now take that design that you know, quickly validated and build it out, right? While you're focusing on something else. So you can kind of like work in parallel with, you know, design and development team. So designer is developing or delivering to the developers something that's already, you know, like went through the customer feedback loop, right? And then developers can, you know, build it out. And again, you don't want to, at this stage, you don't want to build, you know, the massive application.
The huge product, yeah.
Yeah, you can focus on building out maybe like some base functionality and then releasing that as your minimal viable product or beta to the customers and now getting more of that hands-on feedback while they use an actual tool, right? And then repeating that process all over again, because what happens, it's essential not to only focus on gathering customer feedback like in the beginning of the process or at the end of the project, right? It's an ongoing process because as customers use it, they, you know, they have their feedback. You want to learn about the experience, right? So you want to capture it and then again, communicate it back to your team, designers, developers, product managers, stakeholders, and then continue improving as you go. That way you don't have to wait 4 years to deliver the product and you can essentially build together with your customers.
Can you give me one example, like mentioning or not mentioning clients, but that you feel like the whole process, the whole launch just worked and why?
So let me think who will be, we had the one company that we launched last year. We launched the MVP. So we followed the same process where we started with a prototype. We validated the idea and it was a client in like a fintech automotive space. So we validated the idea with three types of the customers, right? Like the end consumer, some of the financial institutions, and like the third, customer group in the automotive space. So once we validated, we interviewed them, we created prototype, right? We got the feedback on the designs. And then based on that, we selected the, you know, technology that would allow us to deliver that functional, minimal viable product quickly. And, you know, we launched it. And so from that point, once the product was live, client went and started onboarding their potential customers, end up raising almost $2 million in funding afterwards to, you know, scale the company. And they're still growing strong. I think they have 10 plus people on their team now. So yeah, it was like very, very fast process. And as they were getting feedback from those early like beta testers, right, we then would take it and like refine it and like make incremental changes both in MVP and then in the designs as well.
So what was the team doing right for that to function that you've seen other teams not do?
I would say, so following the process, right? Not jumping from idea to the development and then getting customer feedback and trying to, you know, fix things up. So we started with the customer feedback and that was, you know, the theme throughout the whole process. And again, delivering something like we didn't build the whole system, like the whole system would be huge, right? We only focused on one specific customer in the beginning. We developed the core functionality that would deliver the most value for them, which was you know, generating like generating results about like different vehicle financing options. So, and from that point, right, once the beta user started testing it, like, oh, this is great. Can you add, and that's where the feedback start coming in, like, hey, can you add this? Can you do it like this, right? So we essentially went from idea, how long did it take us? We went from idea to launching it, I think about five, six months, so.
Oh, wow. That's pretty fast. That's good.
Yeah, yeah. And they already, like, okay, you know, they rolled it out to the market. And from that point, we've been, like, adding more features, you know, scaling it up. And, you know, they and the customer used it to get traction and get sales to then raise funding to, again, like, fund the rest of the development and continue scaling their company.
Right. And what are the, like, so once you launch, and even like in the development process or throughout the development process, or once you're completely live, what are the main KPIs that you monitor, you know, the performance monitoring? What are the main KPIs that you actually monitor?
Yeah, so that's a really great question. And it also varies both for, if you're talking about fintechs and banking, because for the fintechs, if you, let's say you have a software as a service product, right, you might focus on the, you know, like new user sign up rate, user churn rate, you know, all the like the kind of like a customer engagement, time they spend on the app, if that's, you know, part of your, one of the metrics. And when it comes to larger organizations, they might focus on improved operational efficiencies and reducing operational costs, customer satisfaction, right? Also growth of the number of customers, revenue growth, right? So they kind of like focus in on those bigger picture scales on the like stakeholder operational side. And then maybe on the customer side, they also would be focusing on like, you know, user adoption rate, the number of users and all that stuff. So I would say there is no standard KPIs that companies should be tracking. They should align with their business objectives and with the stakeholder objectives. But one thing that I want to add is how important it is to track data and your KPIs from early in the process. It's amazing how many startups out there that, you know, reach Series A round and, you know, have like hundreds or like thousands of customers, and they have no idea what their conversion rates are, like where the customers are coming from. So the earlier you can start tracking, the more data you will have that you can then, you know, make educated decisions moving forward.
Awesome. And what were, tell me like your worst stories. What were some of your most challenging launches that you've had?
I wouldn't say there is something that was like crazy. Everything was on fire and, you know, things got just like turned into the disaster. I would say like the, maybe like the challenging areas when you deal with integration of third-party technologies, APIs, and like dealing with multiple vendors, that can be challenging. Dealing with too many stakeholders can be challenging for moving forward and making decisions. For that, we're usually using DACI framework for decision making. It's DACI for driver, approver, contributor, and informed person, right? So you select several people on your team and you assign different roles to them. So, you know, you have kind of like a project manager person that calls the shots, people who contribute and like informed people that, you know, stay in the loop, but they might not be part of the decision-making process, but they still need to be informed because the final product affects them. So using that framework helped us to minimize friction when you're dealing with teams that cannot make a decision, or when you have too many decision makers that, you know, everybody trying to pull in their own direction. So that, you know, helps to get things organized and avoid, you know, any challenging conversations.
Awesome. Well, I am going to ask you one last question. We're running out of time, but what do you think should be the main strategy right now for fintechs to actually grow, for expansion, for partnerships, to, you know, to develop post-launch?
So for growth, again, you know, it's all about the consumer, right? If you can build product that customers love and, you know, adapt, you then spend much less money on sales and marketing, right? Because the product essentially will be selling itself. If you again identify that unmet need, right? So that's the, you know, the key, like figuring out what is that unmet need that I can solve for my customers with, you know, with my product. And then also in terms of scaling, you know, again, when it comes to banks and like financial industry, there are more and more organizations that look to invest into the fintechs, acquire fintech startups, right, as a way to accelerate the innovation. So and expand in general, you know, banks in general expand their network of partners and you know, providers that they work with. So I would also, one thing that I the trend that I'm seeing, actually credit unions are much faster to adopt new technology on the market right now than larger banks. So if you're a fintech and you're looking to get into the you know, financial industry, look into starting working with credit unions, because they're much faster,
Faster
at adopting.
To move.
Yeah. They have to deal with less regulations than larger banks. And in a sense, they have this, they adapted that startup innovation mentality internally. So that way, you know, they, and that's one of the reasons why they move so much faster right now. So I would, yeah, those two things awesome. I would mention as the key factors.
Those are great tips. Lina, thank you so much for being here. Everybody will be available to answer questions. If you leave them in the comments, they will be there. And thanks again, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you, Alejandra.
Bye.